Life can be very cruel sometimes. We were reminded of that last night when Tony Khan tweeted that Jamin Pugh, known to the wrestling world as Jay Briscoe, one half of the reigning Ring of Honor World Tag Team Champions, Ring of Honor Hall of Famer, passed away just 1 week shy of his 39th birthday and the day before his brother's birthday. Today is actually Mark Briscoe's 38th birthday. Obviously not a very happy birthday for him this year. He leaves behind a wife and three kids and an extended family that is heartbroken today. AEW came on the air tonight for Dynamite with a graphic in memory of Jay Briscoe. And Tony Khan tweeted this for the people wondering, you know, what did AEW do tonight? Did AEW have any sort of special tribute for him? This is what Tony Khan tweeted just a few minutes after Dynamite went on the air tonight. He said, "Thank you all for watching Wednesday Night Dynamite on TBS. We have a great live show for you all. And after the live show, we will film a special ROH tribute to the late, great Jay Briscoe, which will be available soon for free to everybody on Honor Club." Free means everybody gets it for free. He said that it will be free, not behind a paywall, on Honor Club, and they're going to be posting the tribute show in its entirety on the Ring of Honor YouTube channel. Also free to everybody. As tonight, this crew will come together to shoot a special ROH event in honor of the late, great Jay Briscoe. And so that is something that they were planning on doing after they tape the matches, which I believe are being taped tonight for Rampage. They're going to be taping a special that will be accessible to everybody at a later date, which is very nice of them to do. It's still a very fluid situation, unfortunately. Jay Briscoe, not the only victim of what happened yesterday. WWE also acknowledged Jay Briscoe. They broke into the middle of their NXT show live on Tuesday night, just minutes after Tony Khan tweeted the announcement. They had Vic Joseph and Booker T at ringside acknowledging the death of Jay Briscoe, which I thought was very nice to see. And they did the same on SmackDown recently when Don West passed away. They had Michael Cole say a few words about the passing of Don West. Also, somebody who never worked for WWE. And I think that's honestly the way that it should be. You know, in these types of situations, these types of stories, they stretch beyond borders in wrestling. And this is a widespread story. You have people who work in WWE and other promotions who knew Jay Briscoe, who worked with him, who are friendly with him, who are equally devastated by what happened. So I thought that was a very classy move on their part. Tributes have been pouring in since last night, as you would imagine, from people all over the wrestling world, people who worked with Jay, people who knew him personally, and in other cases, people who maybe did not know him as well, but they worked with him maybe once, or they shared a locker room with him. Maybe they didn't get to know him on a personal level as a friend. But to a fault, what I have seen from last night and all day today, from all of the tweets and all of the posts from people all over the wrestling business, when it comes to Jay Briscoe, to a fault, they talked about what a good guy he was and what a family man he was. And that's a key point that a lot of people drove home, was the family aspect of his life. And that just adds to the tragedy of it all, because not only has the wrestling world lost a great wrestler, but you have people who lost a husband and a father. Let me give you the update here. This is what happened. I'm sure most of you know the nuts and bolts of this, but Delaware State Police said that, I'll just call him Jay Briscoe here, you know, for the purposes of this, instead of using his real name. Briscoe was driving east in a 2016 Chevy Silverado 2500 at 5:09 p.m. on Tuesday. At the same time, another Chevy Silverado driven by 27-year-old local resident Lillian Turnahan was heading in the opposite direction. Turnahan drifted across the center line for unknown reasons, ending up in front of Briscoe's pickup truck in the eastbound lane. Both drivers were killed in the head-on collision. The two passengers in Briscoe's pickup truck, identified as his 12-year-old daughter and his 9-year-old daughter, were taken by ambulance to an area hospital and were admitted in critical condition. And they said that Briscoe was not wearing his seatbelt, according to state police, but Turnahan and Briscoe's daughters were. So all of the passengers in his vehicle, his two kids, were wearing restraints of some kind, I presume seatbelts, and the other driver was wearing a seatbelt as well. But when it comes to a head-on collision like that, you know, cops, they pull bodies out of seatbelts just as much probably as they do people who are not buckled in. When you have a head-on collision like that, and it's bad enough, there just isn't a whole lot that can be done. They said police are still investigating the crash. They have not yet determined what may have caused it. And that's important here. And I want to mention this this point. There were two people who were killed in this accident. So let's not lose sight of that fact here. There were two people who were killed in this accident, and that woman has a family as well. We don't know the circumstances around what happened. We don't know what the driving conditions were. We don't know what her condition was. We don't know what she may or may not have been doing. We don't know what we don't know. That's what they're investigating. That is what will eventually come out in the days ahead. Why did this happen? How could something like this happen? We don't know. So before people, you know, go beat up on this woman and start posting things about this woman, let's just bear that in mind, that we don't know anything yet, and there's another family here who also suffered a tragedy in what happened yesterday. And I just think that's an important point to make until we know more. On her Facebook page, Jay Briscoe's wife, Ashley, wrote the following. She said, "We need prayers. Gracie, who's one of their daughters, is on her way into surgery on her back. Jamin would want the whole world praying for his little girl. We believe in the power of prayer. Pray for the doctors and everyone working on her. Pray for her precious legs to move again. Pray for Jaylee, who has some pretty serious injuries but is stable and resting. Pray for Gannon waiting at home. Pray for strength for all of us. We have a long, long road ahead of us." And Jay's mother said that both of Jay's daughters have had emergency surgeries. She says that doctors are not sure if one of them will ever walk again. That is the more serious of the injuries. As if they're not dealing with enough already. I can't begin to imagine in a situation like that what that woman must be going through. You know, to have to deal with the grief of losing your husband, and, you know, you're probably still in shock about that, and that's a terrible loss. But now, you know, two of your three children are fighting for their lives in the hospital. One in particular is in very, very bad shape. And the last thing that you want to do is lose any of your kids. So it's an impossible situation to be in. It is horrifying. And I cannot begin to imagine what she must be going through. He was all about his kids. I believe at the time he was driving his daughters to a school event when the accident occurred. And he had just spent the weekend at one of their cheer competitions in North Carolina. People around town where he lived knew him very well. He was an assistant coach on the Laurel Middle School football team, which is the team his son Gannon plays for. He also coached youth basketball. He was a family man. That was the most important thing to him. And right now his family is really struggling. It is just a tragic situation all around. And then you look at the less important aspect of this, which is the wrestling aspect of it. Now, when all of this broke last night, I was live on YouTube. If you remember, we were going to be doing a watch-along last Wednesday for the first Monday Night Raw, 30th anniversary. All the McMahon family bullshit happened, and I said, you know what, nobody's going to care. Let's push it back by a week. Let's let things settle down. Let's let things calm down a little bit. We'll come back, we'll do the watch along, and it'll be fine. So I went live last night. I figured, okay, it's quiet, right? NXT is on, but who cares? And we'll do our watch along. And we weren't, I don't even think 20 or 25 minutes in, when I started to see messages in the live chat about what had happened. And I didn't believe it at first. Because unfortunately, you have sick people out there who will go on social media and will say, oh, so-and-so died, so-and-so is dead, and then it turns out to be a hoax. Never have I wanted something to be a hoax more than I did last night. So I went, I'm live on YouTube, right, searching, trying to find what's going on, and then I saw Tony Khan's tweet. And in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, well, maybe he was hacked, right? But then it becomes pretty clear that's not the situation at all. And then you just go numb. You know, how could something like this happen? He and I are very close in age. You know, 38, he was 38 going on 39. I'm just slightly older than him. Very similar in age. And when you hear about something like this, someone who's your age or younger, it just really puts things in perspective. When you hear about something like that. The other element of this for me, on a personal level, is that it hits differently because I lost my father in a car accident. And anybody who listens to the podcast knows that very well. It happened right before WrestleMania 31. It was a whole period of time that, I'd rather not go back and revisit. But whenever I hear about something like this, I can't help but, you know, think of that and what we went through in that situation. So it's just an awful thing all around. When I think about the Briscoes, I think of one of the all-time great tag teams. I don't just mean of this generation. I don't just mean of the last 20 years. All time. And where they rank is entirely subjective. When you think of the all-time great tag teams, the Briscoes, I think, belong on that list without question. I think they are the greatest team. I don't even think that can be debated in the history of Ring of Honor. They basically bleed Ring of Honor. But I believe there's also an argument to be made for Jay Briscoe being the greatest in Ring of Honor history when you consider his body of work. Not only a 13-time Ring of Honor World Tag Team Champion, but a Ring of Honor World Heavyweight Champion as a single. And he has held other titles in the promotion as well. But to do it across sort of divisions like that, and to have dedicated his entire career, 20 years, a 20-year body of work in one promotion. It's like a baseball player putting on the uniform and playing for one team and being the star player of that team for their entire career. That's what the Briscoes were. They were the MVPs of Ring of Honor. They were among the first inducted into the inaugural class of the Ring of Honor Hall of Fame early last year. You knew the Briscoes had to be on that list. How could they not be? They are Hall of Famers through and through. But 20 years is a very long time. 20 years is an amazing body of work. And you look even beyond Ring of Honor. Former IWGP Tag Team Champion. Impact Wrestling Tag Team Champions, CZW Tag Team Champions, GCW Tag Team Champions, House of Glory, more recently, Tag Team Champions. I think of obviously their promos. People can talk about their matches, but you also got to talk about their promos. I don't know that I've ever seen a Briscoes promo that did not entertain me. And when I think back to the Briscoes and Jay Briscoe and their promo work, I can't sit here and tell you that I think of any one particular promo, but all of them were just fun. The two of them were like real life cartoon characters. They look like, and I said this last night, you could drop them in any era of pro wrestling and they would fit in. You drop them in the 70s. You drop them in the 80s. You drop them in the 90s during the whole Attitude Era, right? The Monday Night War period. You drop them in the Ring of Honor era. You drop them today, right? They were still having kick-ass matches. They were still relevant today. Any era of wrestling, they would have succeeded. And they would have gotten over. And you can't say that about everybody. But to me, that's, again, another sign of just how great they were. You think about the classic matches they've had, and I mean, we could be here all day talking about Briscoe's matches. But you talk about the matches they had with the Motor City Machine Guns, right? The matches with Kevin Steen and El Generico, the matches with the Kings of Wrestling, the matches with the Young Bucks. Obviously, you think of the classic trilogy from just this past year with FTR. On my list as the best match of the year, I say match, so I lump all three of them together. They were at the top of my countdown. The best match, best matches I saw all year was the trilogy involving FTR and the Briscoes. Those two teams brought the best out of each other. I think of the fight on the farm. I can remember somebody writing into the podcast a few years ago telling me, oh, you gotta watch this. This was back in 2021. You've got to watch the fight on the farm. Mark Briscoe against Jay Briscoe. Papa Briscoe bringing his boys together out in the shed and saying, look, you guys have been having issues. You better work it out right now. I want you two to get it out of your system, hash it out, and be done with it. And what we got, well, I can't even really call it cinematic. It really wasn't a cinematic match. I don't think that's the right word for it. It was on location. And it was just fun. You know, 10 or 12 minutes of them beating the hell out of each other in a shed, on a pickup truck. You know, again, working out their issues. It reminded me of Final Deletion with the Hardys, only without all the gaga and the supernatural stuff. My very first live Ring of Honor show was the very last show that they ever did at the New Yorker Hotel in Manhattan, right around the corner from the Manhattan Center. And it was June of 2006. It was a show called In Your Face. And the very first match on that very first Ring of Honor show that I ever attended, first people I saw that night who came out in the opening match, Jay and Mark Briscoe. That was my entry into the world of Ring of Honor, Jay and Mark Briscoe. First people out. They were out there for a match against Jason Blade and Sterling James Keenan, who many of you would know perhaps better as Corey Graves. That was the opening match of the show that night. I remember the Age of the Fall debut with Jimmy Rave, Tyler Black, Necro Butcher. I was not at that show. I think that was in Chicago or somewhere in Illinois. But I will tell you this, it is an angle and a segment that I will never forget. The image of Jay Briscoe bleeding, being hung upside down by his ankles, as the blood just poured out of his head, Jimmy Jacobs in his white suit, standing underneath him, cutting a promo, basically being bathed in blood as the blood poured down on him and his white suit turned red. That is still to this day one of the sickest things that I have ever seen in pro wrestling, was that segment and that whole Age of the Fall debut, Jay Briscoe being hung by his ankles. I was there at the Hammerstein Ballroom when Jay Briscoe, it was Supercard of Honor, back in 2013. I was there when Jay Briscoe, for the very first time, became the Ring of Honor World Champion and ended Kevin Steen's nearly year-long reign as the Ring of Honor World Champion. And, you know, Kevin Owens posted a very sad, but a very, I thought, you know, touching note on his Twitter account, just sharing his feelings about Jay Briscoe and sharing his feelings about this show that night after he got beat and how cool it was to see Jay inviting all of his family into the ring. There were kids running around the ring as he was celebrating his big moment. He said it's one of his greatest memories from his run on the independent scene. And to be in the building that night and to witness that. And I've seen many Ring of Honor world title changes in person. Homicide was another one. This was one of those memorable moments that you do not forget if you were there. I was there at Terminal 5, the very first Ring of Honor show at the Terminal 5 nightclub in New York City. Final Battle, 2014, for the fight without honor between Jay Briscoe and Adam Cole, and Jay Briscoe successfully defending his Ring of Honor World Championship They had a kick-ass match that night. I believe Adam Cole was supposed to go over. Originally, that was the plan, but he had a shoulder issue coming into the match. He was going to have surgery for it, so that changed the result of the match. But they had one of the more memorable matches that I got to see live. I remember last year when the Briscoes tore it up. I mean, all throughout 2022, they came in to House of Glory here in New York. And they came in, and I just remember sitting on commentary, you know, with JD, and we're doing commentary for all of these Briscoe matches. And there were times where I'd be sitting there thinking, where am I? Like, I'm sitting here doing matches for the Briscoes against United Empire and the Briscoes against Aussie Open. And even when the Briscoes won those HOG tag team titles from Penta and Ares. Ares was a stand-in for Rey Fénix, who was still hurt with the arm injury at the time. That's when they won their titles. They spent the remainder of the year defending those House of Glory tag team titles. Every time they came in, they were the star attraction on that show. Right up until the very last show, which was in December, and they dropped the tag team titles to Main Event. They put those guys over, homegrown talents in House of Glory in the East Coast independent scene. Two really good guys working with the Briscoes. I'm sure they would be the first to say it, elevated their game. They got to work with the Briscoes multiple times last year. It all built to this moment in December, and the Briscoes did business and they put them over. And it was a great moment for the local crowd to see Main Event go over and win those titles and to see them embrace when the match was over. It was a special moment. And it did not hit me until this morning that I got to call the last match that Jay Briscoe will ever have. That match with Main Event was only a week after the match that they had, the dog collar match with FTR. That is the last match of the Briscoes. It was on that House of Glory show. And, I mean, the fact that that is their last match to me just doesn't compute in my brain. It just doesn't feel real. It's not right. It sucks. They should have had many, many, many more matches after that. But that will be the last one that they ever have. You know, they were the reigning Ring of Honor World Tag Team Champions. As far as what Tony Khan plans to do with those titles, who cares? I mean, it hardly feels relevant right now. I don't know what he's going to do. I don't know what the status of the titles is going to be. I don't think Mark Briscoe gives a shit either. That'll work itself out in due time. But it is a big loss. It is a big loss for Ring of Honor. It's a big loss for Tony Khan as he gets ready to launch that weekly Ring of Honor show sometime in these next few months. I'm sure the Briscoes were going to be factored into that. I'm sure the Briscoes were going to be front and center on that show. They were going to be a key attraction in the new Ring of Honor, but again, that'll all work itself out in due time. So now we wait, you know, for more details. We wait to find out the status of his daughters. His family will let everybody know in due time. I hope people don't go poking around and bothering them. I'm sure they'll let everybody know. I'm hoping everything works out for the better. What I can say to sort of wrap this up, though, is, you know, Jay Briscoe will be missed. I mean, I think that goes without saying. It's again, one of those things, you don't know what you got until it's gone. It's always great to see the Briscoes, and you just assumed, all right, well, we'll see them again soon, you know, whoever they're going to work with next. And then, you know, something like this happens, and you realize, man, we didn't realize, you know, we didn't fully appreciate, I think, you know, what we had with him and what this and with this team now until we just didn't have it anymore. But for now, I think I speak for everybody. We are all thinking about his family. We're sending all of the positive energy that we can as much as possible to all of them, to Mark, to Ashley, to Gannon, to Jaylee, and to Gracie, and hoping for a full recovery for his two little girls. Right now, that is the most important thing. So rest in peace to Jay Briscoe. There was a wrestling show tonight, AEW Dynamite from Fresno, the final stop on their West Coast swing, which by all accounts has been a very big success. They've had some very hot, lively crowds over the last several weeks. Tonight was no different. A very, very boisterous bunch in Fresno. And more great wrestling tonight. I think overall, I would say this show is a step down from the last couple of weeks, but still an excellent show. Up and down the card, we had some great wrestling. We had Darby Allin and Kushida in the main event for the TNT Championship. A very different type of match than what we are used to seeing from Darby Allin, in that he didn't completely abuse himself. He took some abuse. I don't want to say that he didn't, especially on that top rope dive when he went splat on the floor. But this was a match where his opponent was working over the body part. He was trying to get him all primed and set up for the hoverboard lock. That was the story of the match. We had, you know, ring psychology, focus on the body part. It didn't have, you know, it wasn't the insanity of the matches that Darby had with Samoa Joe. But I still think they had a very good match. I'll talk more about the match itself a little bit later. But Bryan Danielson and Bandido, that was the match I was looking forward to the most. And they delivered in a big way. As Danielson did last week with Takeshita, he did tonight as well against Bandido. We had the Young Bucks and Top Flight. You can imagine, right, what we saw in that match. Everybody was going airborne. And in the end, it was a huge win for Top Flight. They pick up the shock win. Bucks put them over. And I have a feeling I know where this is headed. So we'll talk about that. And also, we had a heel turn tonight with Saraya and Toni Storm. And it looks like we are getting a WWE Originals versus AEW homegrown talent. A WWE, you know, the WWE crew against the AEW Originals. It looks like they're setting up that angle here, because Saraya and Toni Storm look to be full-blown heel after the angle that they did here at the end of the Toni Storm-Willow Nightingale match. So we will unwrap all of this. It is January 18, 2023. I am the Solid Monster. Thank you for joining me. Thank you for choosing me for your Dynamite coverage tonight. Please do subscribe. Drop a super chat. We'll be hanging out. We'll be reading your messages on whatever it may be. AEW, Jay Briscoe, whatever it may be. You can send them on in. And it would help out the video immensely if you would hit that like button. So please go ahead and do that as well. Athena and Ruby should join them on top. Now, that's honestly one of the things that I am kind of looking forward to the most, if they are doing that angle with the women, because you could add, there's a couple more people that you could add on kind of the WWE side to make things interesting. Athena is already a heel, but Athena is the Ring of Honor Women's Champion. So I don't think that we're going to be seeing her as part of this, but you know, there's a lot of different directions they could go with it, but we'll get to that. The show opened with a graphic for Jay Briscoe, and then the usual intro before Orange Cassidy made his way to the ring to defend his All-Atlantic Championship against Jay Lethal. And let me just also comment on this, because I know there were some people who were surprised that Tony Khan did not put together almost a Brody Lee-type tribute show. You know, obviously, Jay Briscoe was not a member of the AEW roster. And the reason for that is because there was somebody at Warner Brothers Discovery who did not want Jay Briscoe on the show. So even last year, when they were trying to promote the matches between the Briscoes and FTR, at no point were the Briscoes allowed to appear on TNT or TBS, which is ridiculous. But more importantly, his daughters are still in the hospital. And they're still fighting. It's still an ongoing situation. It was a very last-minute thing. I'm sure there were people who, in that situation, they would have wanted to be on the show, like FTR, for example, and maybe they just couldn't make it happen. So I don't fault AEW or Tony Khan for it. Again, they're doing something at the end of the taping tonight in honor of Jay Briscoe. But, again, I don't fault them for not doing more than just putting a graphic up. It's still a very fluid situation. Frankly, I don't know that it would have been completely appropriate for them to go and do something like that until we know what the status of his other family members is. So let's just calm the temperature down on that a little bit. But we had Jeff Jarrett, Sanjay Dutt, and Satnam Singh. They were shown making their way through the crowd after this match started. They were coming down to the front row. They kicked some fans out of their seats so they could take their seats away from them. Danhausen showed up behind them. He was dressed up as an usher. Best Friends then showed up with tubs of popcorn, and they sat behind Singh, Jarrett, and Sanjay to watch the match. Jay Lethal threw Cassidy hard into the ring post outside, and then he bounced actually off the ring post, did Cassidy, head first. Danhausen ended up at ringside in Cassidy's corner, so I guess he wasn't an usher anymore. Chuck Taylor dumped popcorn on Sanjay Dutt, and Sanjay had to hold back Jeff Jarrett and Satnam Singh, because the idea was, if either one of them got physical and put their hands on either of the Best Friends or anybody else, Sanjay would be fired. So he was trying to calm down his boys. The referee, Bryce Remsburg, I believe it was, came outside to the floor. All of this commotion caused the referee to come over. Now, why he would do that when his business was in the ring? Well, LOL AEW officiating. As the referee is tending to the stuff going on in the front row, Jeff Jarrett leans over the barricade to hand his guitar over to Jay Lethal. But before Jay Lethal can take possession of the guitar, Danhausen swoops in and he grabs the guitar. So now Lethal is chasing after Danhausen. And he ends up back in the ring. Cassidy got a quick pin attempt on a Cazadora, but Lethal was able to kick out. As soon as they got up, Cassidy landed the orange punch, and he got the pin to retain the All-Atlantic title. After the match, Satnam Singh got in the ring, and he grabbed Trent, and he grabbed Chuck by the throat. He was going to give them a double choke slam. Sanjay gets in the ring and begs him, "Don't do it. My job is on the line. If you do this, I will be fired. Don't do it." So he let go of them. Jeff Jarrett, same thing. He went to go hit Cassidy with the guitar. Sanjay's begging him, "Don't do it. If you hit him, I'm fired." Then they did a spot. Cassidy gave Sanjay the devastating shin kicks. And they just ended up walking away. The heels ended up walking away. I thought the match itself, I thought, was fine. Nothing really special. We've had better openers. But the fans liked it. They liked seeing Orange Cassidy, so this was fine. We had the Young Bucks. Two-thirds of the new AEW Trios champions. There was no Kenny Omega on the show tonight, but the Young Bucks were there to take on Top Flight, Darius, and Dante Martin. This was the Bucks' first straight tag team match. We're not talking trios. Their first tag team match since losing the AEW tag team titles at Fyter Fest in July to Keith Lee and Swerve Strickland, which is amazing to me, but then I guess not when you factor in all the months they missed because of the Brawl Out stuff. But I had not realized that it has been that long since they had just a straight-up tag team match. Tonight was their first since July. Great action here. You know, the Bucks controlled the action during the commercial break. Nick was able to rob Dante of a hot tag by yanking him down off the apron. The corner bulldog into the drop kick to the face combo by the Bucks connected. Dante rolled through a double arm drag and hit a head scissors on Matt that led to Darius. It was Darius outside. Led to Darius getting the hot tag. He ran wild. Standing Spanish fly on Matt led to a dive to the floor on Nick. Darius got a top rope crossbody on Matt for a two count. A series of blind tags led to a failed Meltzer driver by the Bucks. Top Flight hit a slingshot flatliner and a powerbomb nosedive combination, but Nick Jackson broke it up at the last second. Big reaction for that. Nick hit a facebuster on Darius, a moonsault on Dante outside, and immediately back in with the destroyer on Darius for two. Matt Jackson, he kissed the armband that he had on. A lot of the wrestlers tonight had Jay armbands on for Jay Briscoe. He kissed the armband, and the Bucks hit a very Briscoe-esque doomsday device. But Dante broke up the pin. Dante sent both Bucks outside. He tried his no-handspring, that springboard dive he does. As he came down onto the floor, both Bucks met him with a double super kick. So that took care of Dante. The Bucks went for a BTE trigger on Darius, who ducked. And the Bucks knocked knees together. And then Darius rolled up Matt Jackson for the shock pin. So this was excellent stuff. I thought this was a great showcase for Top Flight and what they can do. They've been on a roll now for several weeks. As I've said before, it all comes down to their health. Dante has been able to stay healthy. You know, Darius is the one who has been out for significant chunks of time with some pretty serious injuries. And so if he can stay healthy and both of them can stay healthy, then they can do big things. They gave the Bucks a little bit of an out on commentary. Excalibur first mentioned the fact that these guys have not had a straight-up tag team match since July, so that's number one. He also brought up the fact that they just finished a grueling best-of-seven series, and they had that ladder match with Death Triangle last week. And so maybe, you know, they were banged up and they weren't 100%, so they kind of gave them a little bit of an out there. But it's not as if they wrestled the match any differently. They weren't nursing any injuries or anything. It was the Young Bucks' greatest hits. You know, they looked fine. And in the end, they put over the young guys. And now this sets up Top Flight to get a Trios title match. Because if you remember, go back to last month, there was that $300,000 Trios Battle Royal they did on Rampage. It came down to Top Flight and Moxley and Claudio. Top Flight won. It was them and AR Fox, right? They won the Battle Royal. Well, they just beat the Bucks. And so it looks to me like you've got a ready-made Trios title match that you can do on TV in the next few weeks. You can do Top Flight and AR Fox against Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks. If they are building to the Elite against the House of Black, I mean, that should be a revolution match. But as a TV match, yeah, why not? Why not build to the Elite against Top Flight and AR Fox? I think that's what they're probably planning on doing. We were supposed to hear from the AEW Tag Team Champions, the Acclaimed. Instead, we got the Gun Club. That's like ordering a gift on Amazon. The box comes, you open the box, and there's nothing inside. So they said that last Friday, the Acclaimed embarrassed them on national TV. They made the Acclaimed popular, they said. They said they made the Acclaimed champions. They even gave them their dad. And they assured us that this will be the last time they ever get embarrassed. And then we heard the theme music for the Acclaimed. Out comes Caster. Out comes Bowens. Out comes Billy Gunn. And the Gun Club, actually it was Austin Gunn who said, cut the music. Before Max Caster could launch into his rap, he called for the music to be cut. Wasn't going to let him do his rap. Caster told the truck to cut Austin's mic and restart their music so that he could do his freestyle, which he went on to do. Then they got in the ring. They all started brawling. Billy Gunn broke things up. He's pulling off the members. He's pulling off one of his sons. He's pulling off one of the members of the Acclaimed. He gets on the mic. He says he was tired of his entitled children. And he told the Acclaimed, you're the champs. You need to start acting like it. He said that next week they're going to sit down and hash all of this out. So right now he's just got two words for us. Family therapy. And then Billy Gunn walked out. So bring on the comedy skit next week. Hey, maybe they can get Dr. Shelby. Right? Maybe they can get Brian Danielson to make the introduction. They've already got Danielson working in the company. Can't be hard to go find Dr. Shelby. Danielson can make the introduction and say, hey, he helped me. He can help you guys. We had Hangman Page in the back having a very casual conversation. They were leaning up on some of the equipment cases with Renee Young, Renee Paquette. Still Renee Young to me. This week's episode is sponsored by our friends at Raycon. The new year is here, and I know some of you might be making changes in 2023. Like finally joining a gym or going back to the gym. I know this because I never had an issue finding a parking spot at my gym until the last 2 weeks. All those New Year's resolutions. And I know that for me, I can't do cardio without my music. Right? Nothing like some War Machine by Kiss to get my heart rate up. The fact is, a good pair of wireless earbuds is a must. And for premium audio at the perfect price point, you've got to go with Raycon. Raycon's everyday earbuds look, feel, and sound better than ever. With their optimized gel tips for the perfect in-ear fit, they're comfortable, and most importantly, they have yet to fall out of my ears. That would be a deal breaker for me. And these have passed the test so far. I also love their noise isolation, which lets me block out outside noise, and their earbud tap functions make them very convenient to use. Raycons give you 8 hours of playtime and a 32-hour battery life, and they're priced just right. You get quality audio at half the price of other premium audio brands. It's no wonder Raycon's everyday earbuds have over 50,000 five-star reviews. I was in the market recently for new earbuds when my last pair from another brand crapped out on me. I ended up using these Raycons, and I've been enjoying them. I especially like the fact that I could use my existing QI pad and just drop the case on it for wireless charging, so I don't have to buy another QI pad. I don't have to bother with any cables and plugging it in. I just dropped it right on there, and boom, it was charging. So here's what I need you to do. Go to buyraycon.com/solomonster today to get 15% off your Raycon order. That's buyraycon.com/solomonster to score 15% off. buyraycon.com/solomonster. And use the code SOLOMONSTER at checkout to get yourself 15% off. And Renee was asking him about his match with her husband last week. And she said that Moxley told her that Hangman really pushed him to be a better wrestler, which surprised Paige. And Paige says that John, you know, he made jokes, so he told Moxley to his face that he was going to knock him out. And that's exactly what he did. And he said that if John has something else he wants to say to his face, he'll gladly knock him out again. And Renee didn't seem all that thrilled by that comment, but she kept it professional, and she asked, where to next? Where to next for Hangman Page? And Page says that he's had some, you know, he's got some tough conversations that he's got to have. He says he has fences to mend with certain individuals, but he did not want to give us the specifics on who those people were. Mending fences, you say? Looks like he's looking to mend some of those elite fences. So at this point, this was the end of the interview. Renee basically sort of ended the interview, but they kept the camera rolling. So the segment continued. And Hangman asked her, he said, you know, for real though, how's John doing? And she said that for the 10 years that she's known him, he's always been hurt. So for him, he'll just dust himself right off. And then Hangman started to, like, very nervously, it was almost like he was going to ask her out on a date or something, right? That's what I would do. Like, if I wanted to get back at this guy who mocked me and made fun of me on TV every week, I'd say, the hell with it. I'm going to try to fuck your wife. I'm going to shoot my shot. It almost seemed like maybe that's what he was trying to do. I don't know. He got all nervous and he was going to ask her something, and then he had second thoughts and he said, never mind. It's stupid, he said. Don't worry about it. And that was the end of that. So, again, I'm not sure what that was about, but I guess tune in next week to find out. We had Ricky Starks against Jake Hager and his stupid purple hat with Chris Jericho on commentary. Hager quickly mowed down Starks right at the beginning. Starks then got the bucket hat. He put it on. Hager ended up out on the floor. Hager blocked the baseball slide as Ricky tried to slide, out to the floor. And then, this is a weird spot, kind of a scary spot. Hager went to go send Ricky into the ring post. Ricky decided, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to slide under the bottom rope out to the other side. In doing so, he got his ankle caught underneath him in a very awkward position. And it did not look good. So when he came out on the other side, he was grabbing at his ankle. And I'm like, oh boy, it's the last thing he needs. He's finally getting consistent time on television. And the last thing that he or Tony Khan needs is another injury. Now, he seemed to be fine because they wrestled for another 4 or 5 minutes. And it's not like he was limping or anything like that. So I think he's fine. But that was a kind of an awkward moment there. Hager controlled the action during the ad break. Coming out of the break, he had Ricky up at a powerbomb position. There was a table that was set up outside by Matt Menard and Angelo Parker. And so he was setting up to powerbomb him out to the floor through the table. Starks fought them all off, though. He got out of that situation. High crossbody by Starks. Hager, though, fought back with a Hager bomb attempt. Missed. And Starks hit a tornado DDT for two. Parker and Menard, they tried to run interference, but they failed, and Starks hit a spear on Hager, and he got the pin to win the match. Daniel Garcia, Sammy Guevara, they hit the ring. Starks, though, sprinted up into the crowd. He wasn't about to get jumped like he did previously, so he bolted up the stairs into the crowd. And again, he looked fine. So I think the ankle is fine. It was just, if you go back and watch that, I'm sure you must have seen it. It was just a very, it was one of those like, ugh, like I hope that's, you know, I hope that's not a break. And so I'm sure he's fine though. But after a commercial, we're in the back. Chris Jericho is beside himself, right? He's with his some of his goons, and he's being interviewed by Renee. And he was pissed about Hager losing. He said next week he wants Ricky Starks and Action Andretti in the ring against himself and Sammy Guevara. And at that point, Daniel Garcia piped up. He said, look, I've already got a match on Friday with Action Andretti. So after I take care of him, let me be your partner. I want to be in the tag team match with you next week. And Sammy, you know, you would think Sammy would be upset by this, but Sammy was impressed because Sammy, you know, basically Sammy has taken Garcia under his wing over the last several weeks. So he was proud of Garcia. He said that, look, if you beat Andretti on Friday, I'll tell you what, you can have my spot in the tag team match next week. And Jericho said, whether it is Les Sex Gods or Garcia Co., which is a terrible name. Either way, whatever the team is next week, he said that Ricky's lucky streak, it ends next Wednesday. Then it was time for Bryan Danielson against Bandido, the battle of the former Ring of Honor world champions. I have been looking forward to this match all week. It did not disappoint. The crowd in Fresno was very pro-Bandido. They were not anti-Danielson, but they were very pro-Bandido. Danielson backed Bandido into the corner. He threw some kicks at him. Bandido came back with a super kick and a corkscrew dive from the top rope. Bandido held up Danielson at one point for a vertical suplex, and you know he does this thing where he slowly lowers the guy, right, as the guy's body is like tilting to the side, like he doesn't have the strength to keep holding him up, and then he muscles him back up into position before suplexing him and holds him there before suplexing him. It was a great spot. The crowd loved it. They reacted big to it. Great core strength. Bandido went up top. He did the Eddie Guerrero shimmy before going for a frog splash. Danielson, though, got the knees up. Bryan put Bandido in the lapel lock. Bandido was able to get to the ropes, or he was trying to get to the ropes. Danielson hooked the arm, and Bandido had to use his boot for the rope break, which he did get. A little while later, Bandido went for his 21-plex finish, but on the German suplex, Bryan landed on his feet. And Danielson took Bandido down with a drop toe hold. Bandido, though, countered into a pinning attempt for a near fall. Danielson came back. He hit Bandido with a flying knee strike off the apron while Bandido was on the floor. Danielson went up top. He ended up getting cut off by Bandido, who joined him upstairs. Both men fought for position. Bandido hit a fallaway slam into a moonsault, which got a holy shit chant from the crowd. Holy shit indeed. Bandido then, on his second try, hit the 21-plex. Danielson, though, kicked out of his finish. The old Harley Race thing. What's your finish, kid? Really? I can't wait to kick out of it. So Danielson kicks out of the 21-plex. He takes Bandido down, sets up for a submission. Bandido powered him up, though. Danielson rolled through. Bandido avoided a backslide attempt, but ended up running into the running knee strike, the Busaiku knee, which turned him inside out. And Danielson pins Bandido. Not a surprise, because, again, he has to win all of his matches if he wants to get the Iron Man match at Revolution with MJF. He cannot lose. Two more weeks. MJF said he would have to win every match for a month. So that would be the February, I assume February 8th must be a Wednesday. If he can make it to the 8th and win all of his matches between now and then, there's two more, then he will get the Iron Man match at Revolution with MJF. This was another excellent outing for Bryan Danielson. I feel like I've been saying that for 10 years now. Another excellent outing here for Danielson, very much like the Takeshita match last week, but also Bandido was fucking great. And I'm just glad to see him. We haven't really seen him on Dynamite, right? He made an appearance on Dark Elevation, I think, a couple of weeks ago. But Bandido, I think, has been wrestling elsewhere, and he has other commitments, and so we don't get to see him every week. But there's a reason why Tony Khan and Chris Jericho both went out of their way into heavy recruiting mode. When he had that match with Jericho on Dynamite many months ago, it was Jericho and Tony Khan. They made the big pitch and said, look, you need to be here. And he had interest from WWE. He had interest from AEW, and he had to make a decision. And ultimately, he chose to go with AEW, which I think was the right choice, because even though I have been waiting for him to actually show up on the show, I don't feel like Bandido would have fared well on the WWE main roster. I just don't have a good feeling about that. Maybe that's just me and all the Vince McMahon PTSD, but if we can get more appearances from him on TV like this, you watch him when he's out there, right? He wears a mask. And I don't know how good his English is. I don't know that I've ever heard him do a promo or do an interview in English. But he goes out there and he has a certain charisma. He has a physical charisma about him. He's out there, right? He's doing all these mannerisms. He's just playing to the crowd and they eat it up. And then he goes in there and his work is incredible. And he just gets himself over through his work. So there's a reason why they went after him so hard. But after the match, MJF appeared on the giant screen. This was serious MJF tonight. This was not one-liner MJF who's out there cracking jokes and saying, you know, funny shit. This was a more serious side of MJF, which I liked. I liked this side of him tonight. He says that he's feeling unappreciated. He is not deaf or dumb. He has heard what everybody has had to say about him not being deserving of the spot that he's in. People seemingly have forgotten who he is and how he became the champion. He says he takes this personally. All the moments he's given us, he says fickle is an understatement when it comes to the fans. Brian has only been dealing with masked Max. He says that he likes to keep things light. He likes to have some fun. But you'll find that the further Brian goes, the closer to March 5th, the more his mask will slip off. And he said that is not something that anybody wants. So I mentioned, you know, he had the match with Takeshita a couple of weeks ago. Yeah. The Juliet in the chat says, McMahon hasn't allowed us to leave the PTSD behind. I guess, yeah, I mean, he's back already, so I guess we're going to have to stick with it for a while. Yeah, we all have McMahon PTSD. But Brian Cage is going to be the next man to step into the ring with Bryan Danielson. Cage and Prince Nana were backstage with Renee after this, but before Cage could speak, MJF wandered into the segment, and he had an envelope thick with money. And he said it was more money than either one of them had ever seen in their entire lives. MJF said, look, I don't care next week if you win. I don't care next week if you lose. I want you to go in there and break his arm. He says, can you do that for me? Right? Because he's got that salt of the earth arm breaker. So that may be the story going into the Iron Man match. Work this guy over, focus on the arm, break the arm. And Cage said, I think we can work something out. MJF then slaps Brian Cage across the face. And Cage grabs him and he says to him, are you out of your mind? And MJF is kind of smiling at him. MJF said, that's hate coming from you. I know all about that emotion from when I was very young. And I used it as a great motivator. And Prince Nana is trying to talk down Brian Cage and tell him, big man, think about the money, okay? Leave the guy alone. So he ends up, MJF says, do you want the money or not? And he lets him go. And MJF hands the envelope over to Prince Nana. Prince Nana opens it to look inside. And then he takes the envelope and stuffs it into his inside pocket. Like any good manager, he is the Don King. I guess it would be of Ring of Honor, right? Because technically, the embassy is a Ring of Honor faction. He is the Don King of Ring of Honor. I'm sure that Prince Nana will give Brian Cage a cool 10% of whatever was in that envelope. So then we had a backstage segment. This was a pre-tape with Saraya, Toni Storm, and Hikaru Shida. They were backstage. Saraya was very upset about what Shida did last week, throwing the kendo stick into the ring, intended for Toni Storm. Britt Baker ended up grabbing it and using it on Toni Storm to win the match, or to allow Jamie Hayter to win the match. And Toni Storm was trying to tell Saraya, oh, you know, it's fine, don't worry about it. She, you know, basically she didn't know any better. And she starts putting over, you know, the fact that the AEW homegrown talent, which Shida would be part of, she didn't say Shida specifically, but she's talking about the AEW homegrown talent. They're simply not well seasoned. They're not as good as us. They don't have the experience level and the knowledge that we do. And Shida never said anything, but Shida had that look on her face like she, again, she was beside herself. She couldn't believe what she was hearing. She was being disrespected yet again by these women. And Toni said that tonight she's going to show Willow Nightingale what she has learned outside of AEW. And Saraya told Shida, this time you stay in the back. Like she's a dog. You stay. Sit. Good girl. There's no way that you can watch this segment and think that Saraya is anything but a heel. She was a total bitch to Shida in this segment. So it was pretty clear, obviously, at the end of the next segment that she is, in fact, now a heel. It would have been ridiculous for her not to be, because in this segment, she was a total heel. But it did lead to a match, Toni Storm with Saraya in her corner, one-on-one against Willow Nightingale, who is part of that hardcore tag team match on Rampage Friday night where Ruby Soho bled a gusher. They took on Anna Jay and Ty Mello. So Willow did a cartwheel off of an Irish whip as Storm then offered a handshake. And when she went in for the handshake, she gave Willow a very uncharacteristic slap to the face, very unlike Toni Storm. Gave her a hip attack on the floor. Shida did make her way out to the ring with the kendo stick, despite what Saraya told her. So she made her way down to the ring. Toni was dominant throughout the picture-in-picture, which honestly is where the majority of this match aired, was in the picture-in-picture. Willow fought free from a full Nelson, hit a few corner lariats, and then a huge spinebuster. Toni Storm responded with sweet cheek music and a spinning DDT for two. Willow hit a corner cannonball as Saraya then jumped up on the apron for the distraction. And this was enough of a distraction for Toni Storm to get the roll up with a handful of tights to get the pin and steal the win on Willow. We had the distraction roll up. A classic wrestling finish here in this match. After the match, Saraya jumped Willow, put the boots to her. Toni Storm joined in on the attack. Ruby Soho made the save with Shida just looking on very confused by what she was seeing. She didn't quite know what to make of what she had just witnessed. Before I even get to this, when Ruby ran out and I realized that Ruby is another sort of cast off from WWE, I thought, okay, we're going to get a heel turn. I thought we were going to get a Ruby Soho heel turn tonight. And she was going to attack Willow, and she did. I think what they are going to do, we're going to get a tag team match. Either next week or the week after. We're going to get a tag team match. It's going to be Saraya and Toni Storm against Ruby Soho and Willow Nightingale. And I still feel like we might get that heel turn from Ruby. And then she can join sort of the ex-WWE crew. Because she's not an AEW original. She came from WWE. She fits that same criteria. Again, we were talking before. Somebody mentioned Athena. Athena would be great with this new kind of attitude that she has about her now, heel Athena. But again, she's the Ring of Honor Women's Champion. Tony Khan has said that coming out of Final Battle, he wanted to do less of the mixing of ROH and AEW. There's still a little bit of that, you know, Brian Cage, for example. But to make her a part of the group, which would make her a regular part of Dynamite every week, I don't see that happening. Which is too bad, because again, I think she would be great to be paired off with Toni and Saraya. Ruby Soho, though, she's the one I would keep an eye out for. And also, let's not discount the possibility that there is always the chance that Mercedes Moné could eventually make her way to AEW. Just because it didn't happen in LA last week does not mean that it's just never going to happen. if it was going to happen, it might happen at a pay-per-view. It might happen at Revolution. And you have Mercedes, you have Saraya, who have history together, and you have Toni Storm. And maybe they are sort of the, you know, quote-unquote invading crew going up against the AEW originals. So it could be, you know, that Mercedes eventually debuts. But to me, I don't bet. But if I did, I'd put a little bit of money on that Ruby Soho heel turn. And then what we could get at Revolution, we can get Britt Baker, Jamie Hayter, and Ruby, right, against Saraya. Britt Baker, I fucked up. Britt Baker, Jamie Hayter, I fucked up all the teams. Britt Baker, Jamie Hayter, and Sheeta is what I meant, against Saraya, Storm, and Ruby. And that could be a trios match or Revolution that we get. And it makes sense because, honestly, Britt and Jamie especially have been getting babyface reactions every week. And so I like the idea. I like the idea of the WWE group, Outsiders, against the AEW Originals. I think that could work. Konosuke Takeshita was interviewed backstage by Renee in the back. And she wanted to know how he felt after last week's match with Bryan Danielson. And he said that he respects Danielson so much and that Danielson is his hero. He also said that he doesn't trust MJF. And so he's going to watch Bryan's back. And then he said something in Japanese that we couldn't understand. And Renee said, well, what did you say? What did you just say? And he said that MJF is an asshole. How can you not like this guy? How can you not like Takeshita? And his English wasn't bad. I know he's been practicing. He's been trying to improve it. So, you know, bit by bit, he'll get there. No, but I understood everything he said. Some people believe that Konosuke Takeshita has to speak perfect fluent English in order to get over on television. Of course, the people saying this are the ones who never really got over at a high level on TV themselves. Takeshita is going to be just fine. The main event on the show was Darby Allin defending the TNT Championship in his TNT title open challenge against Kushida from New Japan Pro Wrestling, making his AEW debut. Not only did Kushida make his debut, but he did so in the main event on this show. And I think it may have been a mistake. And we'll talk about why here in a second. Kushida was accompanied to the ring by a couple of members from the LA Dojo. We were told it was Kevin Knight and DKC. Darby was accompanied to the ring by Sting, so I think Darby wins. This was very different from the matches that Darby had with Samoa Joe. The match when he won the TNT Championship back. This is very different than, frankly, most matches that you will see Darby Allin have, whether it's against Samoa Joe, whether it's against Jeff Hardy, or whoever else it might be. In that, this was more of a technical match. They worked a slower pace. It was all about focusing on the shoulder. It was focusing on the body part so that Kushida can soften him up for his hoverboard lock finish. Very much like a Kushida match. He worked a very similar style in WWE as well when we saw him in NXT. But we're not really used to seeing Darby in a match like that where it's just not as wild as he tends to be. Kushida honed in on Darby's left shoulder. He was working it over into the final ad break and again coming out of it. This match was... The crowd was quieter for this match than they were for a lot of the other matches on the show. They were more up for the Bryan match. They were more up for the opener with Jay Lethal and Orange Cassidy. Because I think they were working a style that people are not used to really seeing Darby, you know, having. They were more reserved here for this match after being pretty loud for most of the night. But I also think part of it was Kushida has never wrestled in AEW before. So I would wager that the majority of the AEW audience have heard of him, they're familiar with him, but it may also be a case where some people just remember him from his run in WWE. He was never treated as a main event player in NXT. You know, he was very hot and cold. He would go through these periods where he would be pushed for a while, he was unbeaten for a while. right? And then by the end of his run, he's in a fucking team called Jacket Time. Get it? What do they do all day? Jacket Time. It's the Jacket Time guy. Who's in the main event on Dynamite? No, by the way, he's never made a single appearance before this on AEW television. So I think there's also a portion of the people probably in that building tonight who were just cold on this guy. Like, who is this guy? Well, he's in the main event. Why? You know? This was different also in that Darby, when he's in there with Joe, and frankly, most people, they have a size advantage on him. And in this case, these two are about the same size. So again, different than a lot of the matches we've seen Darby in recently. He just had a match with Juice Robinson, who's also, you know, a little bit bigger than he is. But Kushida targeted the left shoulder to set Darby up for the hoverboard lock. Allen went over the top of Kushida, hit him with a cutter or a stunner on the apron. And both men went to the floor. Darby hit Kushida with forearms. He set him up in a seated position on a chair. And Darby climbed back up on the apron, and he went all the way up top. And Darby, and this really was the one, this was the one really wild Darby spot in this match. He just dove off the top. And the idea was, on the way down, Kushida would catch him in an armbar, right? But the guy still has to hit the ground. And it's not as if he was going to do a dive onto Kushida and then slide down, and then Kushida would kind of transition into an armbar. No, Darby just jumped. Kushida moved out of the way. Darby didn't really even hit the chair. He just went splat and hit the ground, right? Probably knocked the wind out of himself. And then Kushida locked on an armbar on the floor. So that was a rough spot for Darby to take. Kushida had to break the hold, though, to avoid being counted out, because then you don't win the title. So he and Darby shortly thereafter made it back into the ring. He beat the count as well. Kushida got Darby on the top rope, wrenched him over by the left arm so that he flipped and landed on the mat. Kushida went for the hoverboard lock at that point, but Darby was able to lock his fingers together with the other hand. And outside the ring, there was a towel. Of course there was a towel. It's Jacket Time. What else would there be? What, are you going to have a giant tissue outside the ring? No. You had a towel outside the ring. And Sting was in Darby's corner, as I mentioned. He had this towel. And the dojo guys were trying to convince Sting, like Owen Hart, trying to convince his mother at the Survivor Series to throw in the towel for his man. And instead, Sting just kind of wiped some sweat from his brow very casually, and then he tossed the towel into the fifth row, and he turned back to focus on the match, because Sting don't give a fuck, because Sting is retiring this year, and he's already got one foot out the door, so he don't give a shit. He doesn't care what the dojo guys want. He probably doesn't even know their names. He probably took one look at them and said, "Who are you again? Are you guys Usher? Are you the young boys here? Are you guys ushers? Like, what exactly is your role here in this company?" Darby got to his knees. Kushida rolled him over, set up for something. But Darby took him down to the mat, and he applied his Last Supper hold. His Last Supper pinning combination for the three count to retain his TNT championship. After the match, Darby got to his feet. He offered a handshake to Kushida, who shook his hand, also indicating that he wanted one more match. Kushida then raised Darby's arm, and he bowed before hugging him. And on commentary, Excalibur said, "We're missing you, Jay Briscoe." And he said that you are in our hearts and minds. Not as exciting as some of Darby's other recent matches. I thought this was a good match, but I was not as much of a fan of it as I was the other matches on the show. This couldn't touch the Danielson-Bandido match. If I had to rank the matches on the show, I would go Danielson, Bandido, Young Bucks, and Top Flight, and then this match here with Darby and Kushida. So, again, it was still a good match. There was more ring psychology than we are used to seeing in a Darby Allin match. Darby can't kill himself in every match. I think there may have been another reason, though. I think there actually may have been a very good reason why we did not see Darby taking as many crazy bumps and crazy risks in this match as we normally do, because Darby and Sting are heading to Japan in the next few days. A few days from now, they're going to be teaming with the Great Muda in the final match of Muda's career as the Great Muda character. He'll have his last match ever as Keiji Muto at the Tokyo Dome next month for Pro Wrestling Noah. But the Great Muda character with the getup and everything, this is it. He's wrestling his final match. Sting and Darby Allin are going to be his tag team partners. And so I am sure that Darby did not want... I mean, that's a big spot for Darby to be in. I mean, it's got to be an honor for him, right? To even be asked to be in a match like that. The last thing he needs is to go out there on Dynamite tonight against Kushida and, you know, fuck himself up in some way. So I think he may have also been just sort of... I don't want to say taking it easy, because Darby never takes it easy, but just let's be extra cautious here on this show, because we got a flight to catch in the next few days, and I need to make sure I'm at least 50% for that match. Overall, I thought this was an excellent show. Again, I would say a step or two down from the last couple of weeks, which, honestly, the last couple of weeks, I think, were two of the best Dynamites that Tony Khan has ever produced. I would not say that about this show tonight, but I still thought it was an excellent show. Now, they announced the lineup for Rampage on Friday night, and one of the matches on the show is Willie Mack and Brian Cage, which I was told that Willie Mack and Brian Cage on Dark Elevation this past Monday had a barn burner, that they had a kick-ass match. So they're running it back again on Rampage this Friday, and so I will have to check that match out for sure. Willie Mack is awesome. It doesn't shock me that people were raving about that match, because Willie Mack is great. I was very disappointed when he got that tryout with WWE, and I think they either signed him or they were about to sign him, and then something they flagged on his medicals, and that was the end of Willie Mack in WWE before he ever even really got in the door. So he's been, obviously Lucha Underground. He just finished up not too long ago with Impact Wrestling. But Willie Mack is great. If he earns a contract out of this, I think that would be a great pickup for Tony Khan. Especially if he's looking to build up that Ring of Honor roster. If he's going to launch a weekly show soon for Ring of Honor, he's going to have to beef that roster up a little bit more. Willie Mack, I think, would make a fine addition. Right? They've already got Brian Cage on that roster. Why not Willie Mack? Take a look at the Twitter poll. And we have got 71.5% thumbs up, 15% thumbs in the middle, and 13% thumbs down for Dynamite. So go ahead and vote at Solomonster on Twitter. Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp Online Therapy. I feel like after this week that we've had here, I need therapy. But I feel like I'm at my best when I am working and getting a lot of things done, right? And there was a lot to get done this week. I'm preparing for a podcast. I'm going through email questions. I'm checking things off my list. When I feel productive, when you're at your best, man, you can do great things. But sometimes life can kick you in the crotch and you can feel overwhelmed. You can feel frustrated. Working with a therapist can help get you closer to being the best version of you. And that is where BetterHelp can be empowering. Therapy is a great option because it can really help to just talk to somebody, whether it's about the coping skills that you need to deal with the things that you're going through, or just learning how to be the best version of yourself, whatever it may be. The benefits of therapy are clear, and BetterHelp makes it easy to get started. If you've been thinking about giving therapy a try, BetterHelp is a great option. It is convenient, affordable, and entirely online. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to match with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. If you want to live a more empowered life, therapy can get you there. Visit BetterHelp.com/Solomonster today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Solomonster. King Bling Blah wants to know, do I think the Briscoes are in the 2023 WWE Hall of Fame FTR to induct them? No. Do I see that happening? No, I don't. Nick Grosso with the 1999 Super Chat. First, I just want to say rest in peace to Jay Briscoe. Hey, Tuxedo, have a good night, my friend. First, just want to say RIP. Jay Briscoe, thoughts and prayers with his family and friends. Are Saraya and Tony Storm heels now? And if so, does Athena join them and maybe Ruby Soho? And I guess this is going to make Hater and Britt faces. And we've already talked about that. They are heels now. Britt and Jamie have basically already been baby faces for the past few weeks. And as far as who joins, I think it's a better chance that it's Ruby and not Athena. Because Athena is part of the Ring of Honor roster. Justin Jack with the $5. I admit that I only really became familiar with the Briscoes' work over this past year, but I love what I saw. Rest in peace to Jay Briscoe. Well, you are in for a treat. You can find plenty of Briscoes' content on YouTube. I'm sure they'll have a lot of stuff on Honor Club. I mean, all of their Ring of Honor work will be on Honor Club, but you don't even need Honor Club. You can find a ton of Briscoe stuff if you just search out on YouTube. Some of the matches that I mentioned earlier, you could use that as a starting point if you want to. Jay Briscoe and Adam Cole fight without honor. Obviously, the matches with FTR last year. Any of their matches with the Bucks. Steen and Generico. I mean, you can't go wrong with that stuff. Food Hive is back. Feels good to be back, he says. Good to have you back. Mark Keezy. Stephen Chapa. It's been a while since Steven has dropped the Bully the Clown on us. Steven says, thank you for doing all the work that you do. I may not be on as much due to the teaching and coaching life taking effect, but your streams are always appreciated, and take care, brother. I appreciate that, Steven. Thank you very much. Marquise with the five, thank you for the memories. I'm praying for Jay's daughter's health. Rest in peace, Jay. You have reached the sky, my boy. Samoan fan 101. Jay Briscoe's last match was the Briscoes against the main event at Hog Revelations. Before that was the dog collar match at Final Battle. Yes, as I said earlier, we you know, got to call the last match of Jay Briscoe's career. Which is crazy to me to even think about. Certainly wasn't expecting that at the time when I was calling that match. Brandon Mobley with the $9.99. I took my dad to the first Briscoes and FTR match. He is the one that got me into wrestling. Had not watched in years. We never sat down the entire match. He still talks about it to this day. Rest in peace, Jay. Samoan fan, watched Jay since 2013. He was the world champion. Rest in peace. That's right. 2013 is when he won the world title from Kevin Steen. EJ Slemp, in 2012, I went to a Ring of Honor show, and not only did I meet him, I caught his bandana when he threw it into the audience. I still have that bandana. Rest in peace, Jay. You know, stuff like that is... you know, it's that kind of stuff that you really want to hold on to, and it has more meaning now. I had tweeted a photo after Don West passed away of a piece of hardware that I have from a TNA baseball show back in 2011. Well, it's funny. We got the Bully the Clown Super Chat. Bully the Clown was in a hardcore match with D-Von Dudley. And during their brawl, D-Von hit him over the head with a cookie tray. And I ended up with possession of the cookie tray, which still has the dent in it from Bully Ray's big fucking head. And when the match was over and Don West was kind of running around, I, you know, asked him to come over and he signed the cookie tray. And then we talked for like 2 minutes and then he ran off. But I still have that. And I had forgotten that I had it. But after he passed away, I thought of it. I dug it out, took a picture of it and put it online. And it's just... it's a damaged, dented cookie tray, but it's signed by Don West. And it's just cool that there is no other person in the world. I'm pretty confident in saying that there is no other person on the face of this earth who can say they have a dented cookie tray signed by Don West. Like, nobody else has that. Like, how cool is that? right? I mean, it's those types of just silly, stupid things that, you know, you hold on to. Thomas Rondon, this is a very sad tragedy. This is why you tell your loved ones that you love them. God bless. Rest in peace, Jamin. Jake Johnson, Jay Briscoe is the only wrestler that I ever met. Rest in peace. Anti-Ambishop 07. Thoughts and prayers for the family of the Briscoes, their friends and fellow fans. This is not the time for bad faith takes. Show humility. Great Dynamite. King Bling Blah, predict what does Mark do? Retire or single? It's too early to be talking about that, dude. I mean, I'm sure he will go on. You know, he's got a living he has to make. I don't know what he's going to do. I don't know how he would feel about teaming with somebody other than his brother. I think that would be weird, but, you know, if I had to venture a guess, probably a singles run. He could probably just do his own thing, but way too early to be talking about that. Samoan fan, the Briscoes were also the Impact Tag Team Champions. Yes, I mentioned that at the beginning. I mentioned all the titles that they won. Ring of Honor, Impact, GCW, CZW, IWGP, the whole list. Pretty much every single title, every major title except WWE. And imagine how those matches would have been if we would have had the Briscoes and the Usos. Or the Briscoes and the New Day. Or some of the skits in the segments, if we ever would have had a program with the Briscoes and the New Day. But imagine the Briscoes and the Usos. How great those matches would have been. The Dada and Boys podcast, $4.99 Super Chat. As a fellow dad, Jay's death hit hard, especially hearing about his girls. Which wrestling celebrity death hit you the hardest? He mentioned that Kobe's anniversary is coming up as well. I mean, gosh, there have been so many of them. I mean, I don't want to prioritize one over the other. This one, honestly, hits pretty hard. I don't know if it's just because I got to see more of him, doing the House of Glory stuff, to have them come in. And, you know, sometimes I would just be hanging out, getting ready before the show, working on some notes or something, and I'd look up and they were just around the ringside area. They were talking to people, they were hanging out, and you know what's weird? People, one of the things that people have been kind of joking about is how big the Briscoe family is. And you know, when they would have these Hammerstein ballroom shows in Ring of Honor, they'd have like, you know, 25 family members in the seats. At that last Hog show, which was at La Boom in Queens, they had family there too. And they were kind of sitting in the back, like before the show started, they were kind of sitting in the back and they were like eating pizza, and Mark kept running over, and I don't know if it was Mark's kids or exactly who it was. I didn't get to meet the family, but even at that show, you know, you saw all the family members were there. You know, I didn't see Papa Briscoe, but there was family there as well. So when we talk about, you know, family and how important it was to Jay Briscoe, you could see it. You know, it wasn't just something that people say. It was part of who he was. That's why I said at the beginning, we could talk about his great matches and what a wrestler he was and best this or best that, but, you know, more important than that, you know, there's a human being who died here. Like, the wrestling is just totally secondary. It's just, it doesn't even feel right to talk too much about it just because it's still an ongoing situation and we don't know what's going to be with his daughters, and it's just awful to think about, but this one hits pretty hard. I mean, obviously, Eddie Guerrero was bad. The Benoit stuff, just the gravity of the Benoit stuff, just fucked me up, and I'm sure it fucked up a lot of people. The one, personally, you know, if I had to say which was the one that really got to me the most, I mean, it's Benoit and Owen. Those are the two. When I think of those two, the Benoit thing was just a horrific tragedy in every conceivable way. The Owen thing shook me to my core. You know, I had met him less than a year before that. And then he was only 34 when he passed away. The way it happened, you know, during a pay-per-view. And, you know, I still remember walking home from my friend's house that night. And I was okay. And then I walked in the door and I could hear upstairs, you know, my brother had the news on and it was the lead story on the local news. And before I even came up the stairs, I started crying. I'm like, this is like a fucking nightmare. You know? I mean, this is awful. So the Owen one and the Benoit ones are the ones that, you know, those really, Owen really screwed me up. And it was so preventable, and it still pisses me off just thinking about that. It's just, there's no reason for that, you know? There was no reason for that to happen. But, you know, death is death, and so every death is horrible. This one is no different. Ed Swoggle saw a recent picture earlier today of the Briscoes and the Steiners, began imagining how insanely good that match would be, all four in their prime. Oh my God, I mean, you could say that about so many different teams. I mean, the Briscoes and the Steiners, the Briscoes and the Hart Foundation, the Briscoes and LOD. Take your pick. There were so many great matches that, you know, you can fantasy book so many great tag team matches. Robert says Brody Lee and Jay Briscoe last match were dog collar matches. That is true. Their final matches were well, again, not true with the Briscoes. They did wrestle one more time after the dog collar matches. As far as like a major promotion, big, you know, pay-per-view type match, yes. But that was not Jay Briscoe's final match. God of Seduction with the $5 super chat. Crazy to think that Kurt Angle was almost gone this month. Also, his daughter saved him from drowning. Hoping that Kevin Nash is hanging in there as well. Yeah, Kurt told that story on his podcast. I think he was out jet skiing with his daughter and ended up in the water. He does not know how to swim. And his arms are very weak now. You know, he's got atrophy in both arms. I mean, if you look at him, whenever he would make an appearance or whatever, his arms were very, very skinny. It's from all the atrophy. So he just didn't have the strength, I guess, to doggy paddle or pull himself back up. And he was going under. And his daughter, how old is his daughter? I think she might be like 12. Had to make a decision because his daughter also ended up in the water. And she either had to go get the jet ski or go get her father. I guess the idea was, let me go get the jet ski, I could bring it back over. But she went to go get her father. If she hadn't gone over to him to bring him back up above water, he probably would have drowned. And he told her as much when they finally got back on the jet ski. So that's some scary shit right there. And, you know, Kevin Nash is 12 weeks out from his, you know, father, or not his father, his son passing away. He's been doing his podcasts. You know, it's one of those things where somebody could look totally normal and, you know, back to normal and he's handling it well, but he lost his son. You know, he lost his son and his best friend in the same year back to back. In fact, I think he lost his son on Scott Hall's birthday. Those are two gigantic losses. And, you know, he doesn't have any other kids. It's easy to think that his mind can go to a dark place. Just because he seems to be okay on the podcast, you don't know what's going on in someone's personal life when they're at home and they're alone with their thoughts. You know, he says he still sleeps in his son's bed every night. He's still sleeping in his son's bed in his room. You know, I'm sure he's had some dark thoughts. Triple H, when Triple H connected with him the first time after he got the news, you know, Nash said that Triple H said, "You're not going to do anything stupid, are you? Because you worry. You worry about that." So I heard the comment he made on the podcast, and was it said in jest? Because, you know, Nash is a sarcastic guy. you hear something like that, though, and you get worried. It's like, wait a minute. I mean, you don't want to chalk it up to just his sense of humor, and then God forbid something happens, and it's like, shit, you know, maybe we should have said something. Sounds like everything's okay. But it's understandable, you know, that he's going through the worst possible loss that a person can go through. There's nothing worse. I would imagine there's nothing worse than your child dying before you, because it's so unnatural. It's something that should never, ever happen. I don't know. I don't know how I would handle a loss like that. Nobody does until they're in a situation like that. And hopefully you never are. Armchair Critic, why do you think WWE watered down Punk in 2011? Well, I mean, I don't know that he really truly got watered down until they got into 2012. 2011, he was still, you know, pretty white hot. You know, even up to when he beat Del Rio and won the championship in Madison Square Garden. But the priority was not CM Punk. The priority was The Rock and John Cena. That was the money match for WrestleMania. That is still the biggest money match in the history of WrestleMania. That is why they brought The Rock back. That is why they did Rock and Cena, and they wanted to get a 2-year program out of it. Actually, technically, it was a 3-year program because he came back as the host of WrestleMania. Remember WrestleMania 27? And then they did the match at 28, and they did the rematch at 29. So it was a 3-year program. They were going to milk that thing for all that it was worth. Rock was the draw, not Punk. He was the priority. John Cena was the priority. So call it poor timing, I guess, right? If they didn't have The Rock coming in for a big match like that, I think Punk would have gotten his WrestleMania main event, either in 2012 or 2013. If Rock does not come in, or Rock does not come back the following year, CM Punk would have had his WrestleMania main event. Only reason he didn't is because they had The Rock. It's just bad timing. Justin Logue with the $5 super chat. Rest in peace to Mr. Briscoe. Saw some people on Twitter tearing into his controversies, and all I could think is, show some respect. Now is not the time for that. Well, I mean, those people are fucking idiots, so I would not pay any attention to those people. Just drown them out. Ignore them. They don't deserve any attention right now. I've seen some very stupid comments as well. You know, there's a time and a place. Now is not the time nor the place. So, to those people, I would simply just, say, you know, fuck off and just ignore them. And there's been way more positive comments than anything else. So, but you're always going to have some people on social media who can't help themselves. And, you know, they don't know how to behave. They were raised by wolves. Eric Sean with the $10 super chat. Hello, Solomonster. I've listened to the Sound Off for almost 5 years, but never got the chance to actually chime in the chat. So here is a tiny piece of my appreciation. Keep up the good work. Thank you, Eric. Eric says that he has been lurking, basically. He's been a lurker. So it's good to hear from Eric. Plus Ultra Adrian with the $10 super chat. I've never seen the Briscoes wrestle, but I've heard nothing but great things about their work. Prayers to Jay's daughters, family, and friends, as well as the family and friends of Lillian. That is the other driver. And as I said before, we don't know yet the circumstances behind why she swerved and what happened. And I'm sure that will become clear in time, but until then, you know, you've got two families dealing with losses right now, not just one. Jordan Hitchner, in your opinion, which roster was more stacked, WCW in the fall of 98 or WWF in the spring of 2002? I think WWF in the spring of 2002. I mean, they had some incredible people on that roster. Miguel, I read that wrong. I thought you were talking about Jay Briscoe. It says, no spoilers, Jay versus Claudio is the main event on the tribute show. I said, Jay? And then I assume you're talking about Jay Lethal. but at first I was a little confused by your message there. Drew with the $1.99, thank you for another great stream. Drew, thank you. Winston Smith, best Nick Cage movie. I say The Rock from 1996. I say Face Off. What was that, 97? 98? I think 98. I go with Face Off. Steven Chapa, $30 super chat. We already read that earlier, but again, Steven, thank you. Hulkling 93, rest in peace, Jay Briscoe. The look in Darby's eyes when he hit the floor had me scared that he was concussed. He may well have been. He probably gets concussed every week. How could he not? The bumps that he takes? Rizzo with the $10 super chat just came to say hi to you in the chat. Also to say screw you to the awful Warner Brothers Discovery executive who banned Jay from television because of decade-old tweets. Rizzo also said, oh, $20 super chat from Rizzo here. Rizzo, showing some love. I know it's not one of your favorite things to do, but you do a great job with honoring the wrestlers who passed. The Brody Lee one made me tear up. And I'm guessing the Jay Briscoe one will do the same. Yeah, I mean, I hate obviously doing these segments. We will pay tribute to Jay Briscoe again on Sunday. I'm sure by then we'll also have more information about what happened and hopefully a positive update on his daughters. But yes, we will talk more Jay Briscoe on 792 this Sunday. Slim Yoshi, happy 15th anniversary to Cloverfield. Right, I forgot. January 18th is 15 years, right? Since, or 16. No, 15. 15 years since Cloverfield came out. That's why it is the 15th anniversary. You're right. What was your favorite scene in the movie, as well as your favorite part of the viral marketing? Oh, I mean, I don't remember there being one particular part of the viral marketing. I mean, obviously, you know, all the slusho stuff. There was a part of the viral marketing that showed an oil rig out in the ocean somewhere being pulled underneath by some giant monster. I mean, some of that stuff was really, you know, pretty badass. Favorite scene in the movie? I mean, there's so many great ones. The one that sticks out to me is where, I forgot the name of the character, but the girl, when she starts bleeding from the eyes and they realize that, you know, she's like, something's wrong, I don't feel well, and they pull her behind one of the curtains, and you just see, you know, as her stomach is kind of distended, it just explodes. That scene still sticks with me. Yeah, I mean, it's funny, they just had I think it's a 15th anniversary collector's edition DVD that just came out, and I have it here. And it has some deleted scenes. It's got alternate endings on it, commentary tracks. I haven't watched it yet, but it's been a while, so I'll have to go back and pop that in soon. Alonzo Cruz, $4.99, was shocked by the news. Met him in MCU Park back in 2014 before the show. The most humble and down-to-earth man. Rest in peace, Jay. Prayers to the family. He seemed to be, like you said, very, very down-to-earth. I never had any long conversations with him or anything like that, but at the last show, actually. Very last show. After he had that match with Main Event, they dropped the HOG tag team titles. We were waiting to just talk to the promoter before we left. And as we're standing there, Jay came out from the back and he had his luggage with him. I don't know where Mark was, but Jay was leaving. And every single person that was standing around there, myself included, you know, I'm like, you know, great match. Oh, thank you so much. Shaking our hand. And just like you said, very humble, very down to earth. Like, it wasn't a big deal that he just went out there and had this kick-ass match. And that's just, you know, that's just the kind of guy that he was. Mavs fan 84, want to see Hiromu against Darby. Would be insane. That would be a good match. Justin, I was raised by wolves and I know how to behave. Well, good. You're one of the lucky ones. Some people just were never taught, unfortunately. Food Hive, Knives Out, Glass Onion, and Megan, 10 star. I saw Megan the other day. And I enjoyed it. It was good. It doesn't take itself too seriously. So if you don't take it too seriously, then I think you'll enjoy it. But it was good. I liked it. Yeah, I've been trying to catch up on some stuff. I saw Megan. I saw the first episode of The Last of Us, even though I never played the game. And I thought it was really good. I think it's off to a promising start. I watched the Night Court reboot. The first two episodes aired on NBC last night. So tonight, I caught up and watched them. And, you know, the only cast member from the original show is John Larroquette. And I haven't seen him in something in years. He's the best part of the show. You know, it's okay. It doesn't have the same charm and comedy of the original, but it's only been two episodes, so I'm going to give it time. But, you know, they have the original music, but they had to change it a little bit. They always have to change it. They have to modernize it. So, yeah, I mean, it's not the same, but I'll give it a shot. Yeah, I'll give it a chance. I was a Night Court fan back in the day. Night Court is one of the all-time great sitcoms, so they rebooted it now, and the judge is, you know, the judge is his daughter, right? Judge Harry Stone has since passed away. Now his daughter is a judge. It's the same courtroom. It's the same. His office is the same. Yeah, they tried to replicate as much of the original as they could. Did I watch Violent Night? I did not. Should I? Mavs fan. Who is better in their prime, Cena or Tanahashi? Well, I mean, they're catering to two very different audiences. I think Tanahashi, if you're asking me who's the better wrestler, who's the better, you know, worker, it's Tanahashi. But again, they were serving two completely different audiences. It goes to the question that I talked about Roman Reigns and CM Punk on the podcast on Sunday. Who has had the better overall career? When their time is over, and it may already be for Punk, who will have had the better overall career, right? How do you decide better? What does that mean? It's a very subjective thing. But now Tanahashi was better than Cena. EJ Slemp, The Dark Knight also turns 15 this year. I know it's your favorite movie. Yes, it is. But what is your opinion on Batman Begins and Dark Knight Rises? Batman Begins, I didn't like. It wasn't bad, I was kind of bored by it. So I was not a big fan of Batman Begins. Dark Knight Rises, I really wanted to love it. I love Dark Knight so much. Then I watched Dark Knight Rises with Bane, and all I hear is... Batman is here. What are you doing today, Batman? Whole fucking movie. That's all I heard. I couldn't get over it. I couldn't get past it. Like, who thought that was a good idea?
I thought that was a good idea.
Fuck, man. So, no, I didn't like it as much. I did not like it as much as The Dark Knight. If I had to rank them, I would go Dark Knight, Dark Knight Rises, and Batman Begins. Food Hive says, rest in peace to the Night Court OGs. Yeah, they're all gone, right? Except for Dan Fielding. They're all gone. Harry Stone, right? He passed away many years ago. Marky Post, who was the defense attorney, she passed away many years ago. Oh, God. Charles Robinson, right? Not to be confused with the referee. He was the bailiff. He passed away. Well, Richard Mole is still alive. Bull Shannon. He's still around. Yeah, Bull is still alive. I guess Either they didn't ask him or he just didn't want to have anything to do with the show. Marsha Warfield, though, right? She was on the original show. She's still around. Wonder why she's not on the show. Yes, Richard Mole is still alive, and he bears a striking resemblance to Kane. Dr. Dakota Scorpio, I have never seen The Dark Knight and Halloween 3. You live a very sheltered life, and I feel sorry for you. And you need to correct that as soon as possible. No Cap, thank you for the $4.99. Violent Night is awesome. It's Die Hard with Santa. I will have to check that out. I like that. I like that premise. Isn't that what Santa's Sleigh was with Bill Goldberg, though? Bret Hart's least favorite movie? But I will add that to my list. I've been trying to play catch up with a whole lot of things, so I've been, like I said, starting some of these new shows, and I finished the entire second season of Alice in Borderland, which was great. Trying to catch up here and make up for lost time. I have a whole bunch of shows I need to watch. Actually, you know what looks really good? Let me switch away from this here. You know what looks really good? There is a new show that is premiering on Fox this Sunday called Accused. And they've got a whole bunch of names in the cast, including Wendell Pierce? He played Bunk on The Wire. I think he's the main character on the show, or one of the main characters on the show. But Michael Chiklis is in it. I'm a big Michael Chiklis fan. I usually check out whatever he's in. He's on the show. It looks really good. It's a new case every week. So I'm definitely going to check that out. I have that on the DVR already. I think that starts on Sunday. Yellowstone, I have not gotten into Yellowstone. I think now they have an offshoot, right? It's like 1880-something and 1923, or right, though they have some spinoffs, I think. I feel like I have to watch Yellowstone before I can start any of those other shows. It's too many shows. If there wasn't so much goddamn wrestling, I can watch these other shows. There's too much wrestling. That's the problem. Winston Smith, have you seen Pitch Black from 2000? Pretty scary movie. Is that the one with Vin Diesel? I saw that many years ago. I wasn't really a huge fan of it. Have I ever played the Oregon Trail on PC? Not only did I play it, it was a Sound Off Gamer episode. And I created a team of podcasters. So it was what I call the Podcaster's Delight. And I won't spoil the outcome for you, but we did not do well. So if you never saw it, there is a playlist on this channel with all my Sound Off Gamer episodes. And just look for the Oregon Trail one. It'll be on there. People seem to enjoy it. You might have to do another one of these days. Do I mean the Mountain Dew Pitch Black? No, I do not mean the Mountain Dew Pitch Black match. Although I'm sure BlizzFan is very excited about the Mountain Dew Pitch Black match at the Royal Rumble. Oh, so it's 1883, not 1889. Well, that's good. You would have had me watching an entire movie about 1889 that had nothing to do with the source material. Who are the other podcasters? You got to go watch the episode. Don't be lazy. I don't want to spoil it. Go watch for yourself. Food Hive says Night Court reboot. This is like Twin Peaks 2017. I never watched Twin Peaks. Never watched Twin Peaks, so I can't speak on it. But let us go. I did not set a likes goal for tonight. It just didn't feel, I don't know, it just didn't feel like one of those nights where a goal made a whole lot of sense, but we will be the booker here. You guys have been liking the video. I appreciate that. Over 450 and counting, so that's awesome. Hit that thumbs up. But first, the Mount Vernon Kid says, the sequel of Night Court, like you, love the original. It has potential. I think we will see guest stars from the surviving OG cast. Well, that would be nice if we saw Richard Mole and Marshall Warfield on there. I think they're the only other surviving members, right? I mean, as far as like full time, I don't mean like cameos and stuff. I feel like everybody made a cameo on that show. Like, there are so many stars who made cameos as, you know, defendants who they brought into court. I remember Robert Englund was one. There were so many of them. Do I think Kurt Angle could have been a huge babyface during the invasion angle if they had stayed the course? Of course, he's an American hero. Of course he could. Absolutely. All right, let's do some Be the Booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to Be the Booker.
Did anybody watch The Black Phone? Yes. I watched The Black Phone with Ethan Hawke, yes, when it came out on Peacock, right? A few months ago. Very good. Very good movie. Okay, so let's begin here with men's Be the Booker. Like we always do, we'll try to book some matches here, put our own card together. And we will kick things off here with Broken Matt Hardy. I had seen something online that he is apparently broken again. Is that the case? Are we going back to Broken Matt? Broken Matt Hardy going to go one-on-one with Jerry the King Lawler. Well, that sucked. Well, let's move on. Let's move on to the ladies, and boom! We begin with, here's someone new that we don't end up landing on too often here. Camille. Is Camille still the NWA Women's World Champion? I believe she is. Once I saw that the Funkasaurus was the NWA World Heavyweight Champion, I pretty much stopped caring. But I like Camille. When I was watching NWA Power consistently before the pandemic, Camille at that point wasn't really doing much. She was the silent kind of enforcer. But she has grown and she has gotten better since then. We have Camille going one-on-one with Snooki. Who did a handspring spot at WrestleMania 1 year, and everybody talked about her like she was fucking Mildred Burke. Let me tell you, some of you people have very low standards when it comes to wrestlers. Holy shit. People were talking about her like she was the Logan Paul of that time. She did one fucking impressive spot. Give me a break. There's no business being in the ring. All right, here we go. Let's pick a tag team here. Tag team, Be the Booker, save us. We begin with the Colossal Connection. Andre the Giant, who is practically immobile at this point, and Haku, who is somebody that you did not want to mess with. Andre and Haku, who lost their tag team titles to my favorite team of Demolition at WrestleMania 6. Colossal Connection going to be taking on the Rhodes Scholars. Oh, boy. This was just awful. You know how many tickets we're going to sell to this show? Zero. We're not selling any tickets to this show. I try to book matches that people would want to pay to see. And I did not get the job done this week. I may have just bankrupted the promotion, in fact. Dr. Dakota Scorpio says, Vince returning really cursed Be the Booker. You know what? You may be right. I think some of that bad mojo is rubbing off on my booking ability here. I think Vince has actually usurped me. I think Vince is back in creative now for Be the Booker. I think that's the problem, guys. And you know what? He now took all the power away from the Solomonster Sounds Off Board of Directors. So Vince pretty much can do whatever he wants. And now he is booking. He is controlling Be the Booker. And this is what we end up with. We end up with Snooki and the Rhodes Scholars. All right, well, listen, obviously a very sad time this week. I wish there was more energy here to talk about this show, but it's kind of a dark cloud hanging over things in light of what happened yesterday, and hopefully I was able to do him justice before talking about Jay Briscoe. We'll talk more about him on the podcast this Sunday. I'm sure that will be the lead story on Sunday as we wait to find out what the update is on his family. Hopefully it is good news, but you know, based on the updates from, you know, Jay's wife and his mother, it's not sounding good, but hopefully, you know, his daughter can pull through and she'll be able to walk and live a normal life. And again, it's the worst kind of tragedy you can imagine, but I know that family has a lot of people pulling for them right now, and it's just, it's still surreal to me. It still doesn't feel real. We'll be back live again on Friday night. We'll be talking SmackDown coming up on Friday. Big contract signing with Roman Reigns and Kevin Owens. Some people thinking that maybe this is where Sammy gets whacked. Could this be? You know, to kind of get back at Kevin Owens, could this be where the bloodline turns on Sami Zayn? I still tend to think that that'll happen after the Rumble at some point. But every week that goes by now, between now and then, could be the week that it happens. Every week that goes by could be the week. So we could be in for a big SmackDown on Friday. Queen Fire Panda, one last super chat here. Says, it's official. Sound Off Pro Wrestling's booking is bad. Like I said, don't blame me. You can blame the Irish madman. But again, we are all thinking about the Briscoe family. So I will see you guys on Friday. Until then, I said it at the top, and I will say it again here. Rest in peace to Jay Briscoe.